Hey, what's up? Welcome back to Wild On Season 6. I'm your girl, Taylor Wild, and to my left, my co-host, my sister from Etobicoke, the Veronica to my Betty of professional wrestling, Silesia Sparks. What's up, bitch?
What's up, bitch?
Today's guest, we're going to do something a little different.
Okay.
He's not a pro wrestler.
No.
He's a pro boxer.
Ooh.
But first up, we got some piping hot Sleazy Tea.
Sleazy Tea.
Okay, bitch, let's get into it.
As
always, we have changed the names to protect those who are innocent until proven guilty.
Bullshit. Bullshit.
Okay, so we're going to talk about somebody called Dumbo. Dumbo has been involved in the wrestling world for quite some time.
Is Dumbo dumb? Because he sounds dumb already.
Yes. For the record, Dumbo is dumb, but he's also actually dumb. Extremely intelligent.
I know.
Like, intelligent to a fault, probably.
Oh, really? Yeah.
A little bit. Okay.
He's still dumb.
So, Dumbo.
Yeah.
Dumbo shot his shot with somebody we will call Gwen. About.
She sounds hot.
She is.
I already like her.
What?
I like Gwen.
You know what?
Yeah.
I've had enough of Gwen.
Yeah.
I hear she's nice and talented.
Yeah, it's very cute. Very sexy.
So back in the day, Dumbo shot a shot with Gwen. And I'm talking like a long time ago.
Okay.
Okay.
Did he succeed?
No. And actually, as a result, because of the person Gwen was, they actually became good friends.
Yeah.
Good friends up until present day. Okay.
Ooh.
So they've always had like a bromance, I'll call it.
Yeah.
Where Gwen wanted no romance, but
she became
Dumbo,
the bro. Yeah.
But Dumbo wanted the romance, so he was like, well, I'll take the bromance if I can't get
you.
The romance.
I get you.
That's funny.
Bibbidi bobbidi boo.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, magic. Exactly.
And then because of this bromance, Dumbo probably pushes the envelope in things with wrestling. Okay. So Dumbo wanted to do a wrestling spot with Gwen that involved kissing. Okay. This is a thing older than time. I just want to throw it out there. When you see a kiss.
Boring. Spot, we're bored. We're so bored.
However, though,
yeah,
I want to say 99% of the time, if you see a kiss spot in professional wrestling, it is probably driven by the male.
Oh, 99%? 100% of the time, even if it's woman to woman, 100% of the time, it is driven by some male in the back.
Actually, no shade. I'm a shout out to Allie Catch.
Yeah.
Because homegirl does a kiss spot.
I did one back in 2013. Me and Scarlett Bordeaux, Ring of Honor, by the side of the ring. Like, they're like, you got to make out with Jay Lethal. And I was like, I'm seeing somebody. I can't do that. And they're like, well, then you got to make out with Scarlett. And I was like, okay.
But like, speaking about the male driven kiss spot,
yeah.
Allie Catch wants to make out with every single opponent she ever wrestles. And I'm talking about
female. We need a match, baby.
I'll kiss you, Allie. It's fine. Silesia will definitely kiss you. Okay, sorry.
Wow.
We're bringing it back. That's not
Sleazy
Tea. That's just a hot take.
Yeah.
It's just a hot take.
That's ADHD.
Are you following the bouncing ball? Okay.
Oh, my Lord.
Back to Dumbo and back to Gwen.
Yes.
Okay. Dumbo wants to kiss Gwen. So he wraps it up and does a kiss spot. Okay. Mm-hmm. It's good. Here's the problem. Gwen's fine with the kiss spot because they're bros. No bigs. Okay.
Right.
It's wrestling.
Was it the thumbs up kiss spot? Was it like that? Do you know that one?
Oh, no. I think it was just like, there was no tongue. It was like a matrimony kiss. It was like,
I get you. I know. Oh, I would have hella
thumbs. COVID.
Oh man. Put a mask on. Yeah, literally.
Okay. So the kiss spot happens. Crowd goes wild. Everyone loves it, right?
Right.
Here's the tea.
Yeah.
Dumbo.
Yeah.
Has a girlfriend who is also in the community.
Why am I not surprised?
Okay.
Why am I not
surprised? We'll call her Honey Buns.
I like it.
So, Honey Buns also used to work with Gwen.
Right.
A long time. They're girls. They've been in the sisterhood.
Right.
There's no issue. They've known each other a long
time. There wasn't an issue.
There wasn't an issue. Guess what? Because of this kiss pot.
Right.
Now there's an issue. Now there's a motherfucking issue. Okay? if Gwen knew that Honey Buns and Dumbo were dating, she would have never agreed to the kiss spot unless it was cleared with Honey Buns. Right. Because girl code. Or she just would have been like, you know what? I don't think that's a good idea.
Okay, but like, what's Dumbo doing out here, my friend? Dumbo, you know what you're doing, my guy.
This is the pot. And Dumbo's going like this.
Oh my gosh. See, if I was, what's her face?
Honey Buns?
Honey Buns. If I was Honey Buns, Dumbo wouldn't even have a fucking second to be like, to explain the story as to why he's fake kissing or like script kissing Gwen. No, bitch, you know what game you're playing. You know what the fuck you're doing.
Totally.
Get out of here.
So,
get out of here.
Poor Gwen.
Mm-hmm.
So, Gwen is literally the one that I hear that put all this, like the pieces together.
FBI researcher.
Did her FBI, CIA girl research. Like, don't get that confused. Don't fuck with us. No. But yeah, so like Dumbo basically ruined a girl relationship.
To get off on like fucking stirring the pot? Why? What do you get out of that?
I think so. I really think so. So you know what? That's the moral of today's story.
This is the moral of the story.
Yeah. Fuck you. Just know the moral of the story is if there is a kiss spot, it's driven by the man.
Yeah, always.
Or Alley Catch. Who wants to make out with you? Every female opponent or male, because girl doesn't discriminate. She is just
good for her.
She is getting it
in.
Yeah. But again, comes back to girl code.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Men, stop stirring the pot and stop using women. We are competitive enough with each other.
And women recognize when motherfuckers are motherfuckering.
Yeah.
Get
stop
it?
Stop motherfuckering.
Stop it.
Because we are all certified CIA, FBI agents.
Do you know who we are? We will like hunt you down. We will find you.
We will go through all the social medias. We will go back in your pictures until 2009.
We will find your birth certificate, all right?
It's not that hard.
Psychos.
Psychos, excellent segue for today's guest. He is a certified psycho. He is from Cape Breton, not to be confused with Nova Scotia, because these two things are
separate
entities, okay?
Yeah.
We, as in Silesia Sparks and Taylor Wilde, have brought today's guest into the professional wrestling world.
Do you know he's actually the North American WBC Cruiserweight champ?
Shit.
Yeah.
Sounds like a lot.
He's got two more fights. Well, this fight, once he wins this fight that he's got coming up in December, he goes on to the world championships.
Preach. So he's not small time.
So this is the real deal.
Oh, so we are getting him right on the blow up.
You're welcome, motherfucker.
Okay.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, our boy, Ryan Rozecki. From Cape Breton.
Yeah.
And do you relate that to Nova Scotia? Because my boyfriend is from Wolfville, Nova Scotia, and he said that Cape Breton is its own separate entity.
That is right. Cape Bretoners think that there is, well, most of them, 90% of them think that life outside of Cape Breton doesn't exist, and the rest of Nova Scotia are mainlanders. And
is that a dirty word, mainlander?
No, it's just like the enemy.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so you grew up in Cape Breton. Like, 99% of our listeners are American, so they don't know what that means. Like, what's the demographic like in Cape Breton?
So it's like a very small population. A lot of people are fishermen there. They work labor. It was mostly all white up until probably like, I don't even know, maybe 10 years ago when like brown people started coming in for school.
Sure.
I don't know what you want to refer to them as. Like,
Arabic? Not Silesia, like Silesia.
Yes, like
brown people.
Silesia, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. But, okay. But we, like at first when like the different races started mixing in Cape Breton, it was like warfare.
I imagine.
Yeah.
Well, that's what like Toronto was in the 70s. So my parents grew up in Roncesvalles, which is like Bloor West. It was like really Polish and kind of just west of us was Dufferin and DuPont. It was very Italian, and like it was Eurocentric, and it was very white. But within those like sects of Euro, it was like my dad fought every day on the way home, and it was just because he was a Polak, and he may have like approached a Portuguese guy, like, okay, so tan,
yeah,
tan versus white. But yeah. I get it. It's like turf wars, right?
It was like, yeah, it was like that for like not anymore. Like the Cape Bretoners are more a little bit more up to date now.
Woke,
but they're more woke. Yes, they're a little more woke. But like for a long time, like even up, you know, to a few years ago, like yeah. it took a long time for them to kind of come around and you know, get with the times, right, so to speak.
What was your upbringing like? What did your parents do?
My parents were like, my dad just kind of worked, did whatever he could. I think he managed a trucking company, but he used to sing in the bars a lot.
No way!
He played guitar and sang in the bars. That's how he made his like side. My mom was like a stay-at-home mom, and she kept us, me and my sisters, on the straight and narrow. Mostly me, though, because I was the kid that always wanted to fight. I wanted to fight everyone. Even if no one wanted to fight me, I'd fight my sisters.
Is that something ingrained in that culture, would you say, fighting?
Yeah, especially my family. Like, the family that I grew up, I remember my uncles always coming around. They had bloody knuckles, black eyes, stitches, really? And they were always talking about the fight last night or the fight this morning. So I was always...
All you heard. Yeah. That was, like, your influence. It was
yeah.
normal.
Yeah, that was it. Oh, it's all I cared about.
So how many times would you say that you were suspended or kicked out of school?
too many. I got in the end I ended up getting expelled from high school, and none of the other high schools would let me in. Like, it started around middle school, grade 8.
Okay.
And then I got suspended so many times that they had to hold me back because I missed most of the year. As soon as I would go back, it would be right back to the
south.
If anyone in Cape Breton watches this, they know about the school Southside. They shut it down. It was called Southside. I can't remember the full name of it. Basically, troubled youth would go to this school to push them up to where they were supposed to be.
Okay.
So, like, for example, I kept getting held back in grade 8 for missing so much time for fighting. So I was supposed to be in grade 11 going into 12, but I was still in grade 8. So my mom started homeschooling me.
Oh, okay.
That went sideways because I didn't want to stay home. I wanted to be able to fight. So then...
poor mom.
Yeah, my poor mother.
Shout out Ryan's mom, hey.
Sorry, Jolene. But so they ended up... I ended up going to this school. They accepted me, and then I spent half a year there basically getting caught up with all my education.
Okay.
And then I got thrown right into 11 going into 12.
Okay.
Around that time, it was like high school versus high school.
Yep.
So every lunch, as soon as school was over, I was fighting. Like, I was fighting other high schools. Guys would come, and they'd want to fight, or we would go there.
Shit.
There'd be brawls.
So was it like a town spectacle? Like,
yeah, kind of. no betting, but like it was just basically everyone wanted to beat me because I was the guy that no one could beat at that time.
Crazy.
Yeah.
So it was like you were literally born into this life.
Oh yeah.
Do you think about what you'll do after boxing? Like, is that a thing that enters your head?
Honestly, like my promoter Dan, his wife right now, she works with the WBC, which would be like, the WBC is like the highest organization, so that'd be like the WWF or okay. WWE in wrestling, right?
Okay.
She's got a program called WBC Cares, and they're looking into opening up this thing for fighters after they retire, because everybody knows, like, boxers have this, and probably similar wrestlers, like, when they retire,
yeah,
it's like, what the f*** are we supposed to do now?
Oh, 100%.
You know? Like, all this money, and then, but yep. That's no good if you can't keep your mind straight, and there's nothing to focus on, so... No. A lot of boxers end up like going off into drugs, going off into crime, killing themselves after their careers are done because they don't know what else to do.
Yeah, yeah.
So the WBC Cares is going to have this thing. It's like a program for fighters to basically like figure out regular life without fighting after it's over. So I already like, I'm going to sign up for that.
Okay.
Yeah.
You're like, I'm going to be the first.
Because no, really, I have no idea. Like on the way here, I almost got into a fight.
What happened?
I stopped at Jim Hortons to go, you know, go to the...
Take a pee.
Yeah. And they're fucking kids, like some bunch of high school kids come in. They're like, look at this fucking guy. And I'm like, what? Me?
They're trying to pick a fight with you.
Yeah.
But the fact that you're peeing.
Yeah.
Like, and they're probably checking your pecker at the same time.
Maybe that's why they want to fight.
Ah, penis envy. It always comes back to penis envy.
Could be.
Okay. Anyways. Okay. So growing up in Cape Breton... You were basically born into boxing, but you got into a lot of trouble.
Not boxing, fighting.
Fighting.
Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
Born into
fighting. I'm still not a boxer.
What, how does, to explain? I thought you were a pro boxer. Is this interview over?
I'm a pro boxer, but like boxing's like a like an art. They call it the sweet science. So it's like very technical. Takes like the skill that's going on in there. It's really really high level. Whereas like I'm just learning these skills. I've literally gone into pro fights with no game plan and just swang for the fences, knock guys out. So I'm like,
oh, I see.
They're boxers. Where like I'm like kind of like a fighter boxing.
At what point are you like, yeah, I'm a pro boxer?
Once I just like,
or someone labels you that, is that like where the change will come?
I think it's just like my style, like who I am and the way I fight is okay. Like I can't really like see myself as a boxer, because when I think of boxers, I think of like Floyd Mayweather, who's like okay. a technical skilled like he's a technician.
Yeah.
And then like me, I think of myself as like obviously like the Jack Dempsey, like a mauler. Like I'm not really in there to be like skillful and show the people these like perfect skills. Like I'm just trying to like kill the guy.
Well, that's what Silesia said. Like she went to watch you spar this week and she's watched some of your fights online, and the report back was you just look like you're in there to kill people.
Yeah.
So you're a fighter, not a boxer.
Yeah.
Okay. You heard it here. Yep. Okay. So you were faced with a life of crime, a life of fighting, or like tell me the weave journey.
It was a little bit of both for the longest time.
Okay.
My family, the Rzeczkis, come from like nothing, and nobody had ever at that
good
time
Polish nobody, family, right?
Polish family, yes. And at that time, no one had ever graduated.
Okay. Oh, really?
The females did, but okay. Not no male ever graduated.
Ladies, they were just holding it down for the family.
Yes, okay. And the males would leave school and go off and make money. That's what it was, man. Sure. You couldn't work labor while you're wasting your time in school. Basically, that's how my family was.
Got it. Okay, so it was a way of surviving.
Yeah. So I was like, at the end, I ended up being like one credit away from graduating high school. Yep. And I ended up like getting involved in a street fight outside of the school and beat a guy's head off the concrete. It was real bad. So I got charged, and they and then they were going to let me back in just for this one credit, but they were going to put me in a classroom with no other students. I wasn't allowed out at the same time.
Put you
time.
In a cage.
Basically locked me
like
up.
Like Hannibal Lecter.
Pretty much.
Finish the last f-ing credit.
Yep. Okay. And we had a meeting, and it was like me, my dad, my mom, school cop, principals, and the teacher that was going to teach me my final credit. It was science. I still remember. And we're sitting there, and like they're going on how they're going to let me back in. Yeah. The meeting was like an hour, and then I remember like me and my dad were like quiet. My mom was all like, yeah, okay, thank God. He's gonna graduate high school.
Yeah.
I just remember my ears ringing while everybody was talking, and all I could think about was like fighting. And then the principal like was like, Ryan. And I kind of like snapped out of it, and he's like, does it sound good? Like, you gonna like follow through? And yeah. I was like, no, I'm gonna be a professional fighter. And they were like, what? They started laughing.
Wow.
And they're like, what? And even the school cop was like, Ryan, come on, right? Like, and then my dad was sitting there very quiet, and he looked at me, he's like, are you sure about that? And I'm like, yeah. And he's like, all right, let's go. And we walked out. Yeah.
So like in the witchcraft world and like spirituality, that ringing in your ear is like a divine sign from whatever you believe in, like the universe, God, the witches that you're afraid of. And that's like, it was like your brain redirecting yourself. Like even though your whole family's sitting in front of you, you have the option to do the right thing in your mind. Your brain was going, nah, I'm switching gears.
Yeah.
So here you are. And now you're sitting next to a witch. You're welcome.
You've seen all this already, didn't you?
I saw it.
Wow, that's why I'm here. Ta-da. Whoa, it's all making sense now.
Did you ever think of opening your own like boxing facility in Cape Breton to like help other people that were kind of born into this fight life?
Yeah, 100%. Like the gym that I started, and it ended up I started there as an amateur boxer. So
what's
people,
a gym?
Oh, it was Sydney Boxing Club.
Okay.
And then in the north end of Sydney. Sydney is the city in Cape Breton.
Okay.
So that's like the hub of Cape Breton. It's our one little town that we have with, you know, where all the revenue comes in.
How many streetlights are there in Sydney?
You can count on just one street.
There's like the street. Yeah. There's one street. Okay. Yeah. Just like perspective, because I don't think people know.
It's like a small, small area.
Okay.
Yeah. But so I started at this gym, and my dad took me there every day. I started fighting as an amateur. Mm-hmm. And then the coach that was running that gym ended up having to leave to Halifax. He had to head off to the mainland for work. He was a correctional officer.
Okay.
He was shutting this gym down, And this was right around the time that I turned professional.
Okay.
So my dad ended up like taking it over to keep it going, because this club like basically was saving like countless lives in Cape Breton. Like wow. Kids who were on wrong track would go to this gym and it would just give them purpose, right? Like myself. So
I get it.
Me and my dad actually ended up, and a couple other people helped out, ended up taking over that club and kept it going.
Oh, okay.
And we changed the name to Thunder Boxing. But then I think 2 years ago, we had a hurricane and it dusted the club.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So right now I'm like, I can't. I'm so involved in my pro career, I don't really have time to focus on that. But as soon as, you know, my career is done, I definitely want to reopen a gym there. Yeah.
There's a big heart inside the killer then. You do have feelings outside of killing.
Yeah, I don't tell anyone.
It's a secret. It's a secret. No one will know. Yeah. It's just me and you.
Cut that part.
We know about your boxing career. We know you grew up in Cape Breton. Born fighter. Tell me a fun fact.
A fun fact?
That you like love stuffed animals or something like that.
I love like stuffing animals, like killing them and getting them out.
Okay. You like hunting.
Hunting, yeah.
Any like weird hobbies?
Not much. I mean, I have a daughter. Does that help?
That's a great weird hobby. Yeah. I have one of those too. He's a boy. How old's your daughter?
She's two.
Two, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Shout out to Ryan's daughter.
Yeah, but that's my soft spot. Oh. Yeah, for sure.
What's your favorite thing to do with your daughter?
Just show her new stuff, like seeing her reaction to new things, you know?
It's crazy watching them become humans, isn't it?
Yeah. It's crazy. And seeing her, like, she looks at me and, like, the first thing, she calls me Hook. I'm not Dad, I'm Hook.
Like the movie? Like the pirate?
No, like Hook, like a hook. The pirate.
I like my story better.
Yeah, maybe it is the pirate. The gold teeth and stuff, maybe, yeah.
I mean, like, same.
I never thought of that.
You're welcome.
But no, she sees, she's like, slip, hook, uppercut. She'll start throwing combinations. Oh, so, like,
God, you're raising a little psycho. But it's in her DNA.
Honestly, it is, because she I didn't even start showing her boxing. She just started doing this on her own.
That's really cool.
Yeah. So any, you know, boyfriend she has, I don't got to worry.
No, actually. I feel like no matter what, though, when your daughter is of that age, knowing who you are,
yeah,
it's going to be hard for
it's
her.
It's going to be tough. My little sister couldn't get a boyfriend. She's like, it's your fault. She tried to go to Paradise to get a boyfriend. And they'd be like, oh, what's your name? She'd be like, well, my name is Marley. Oh, Marley what? Rosecki. And they would just be like, oh. And they'd turn and they'd go.
It's not worth it.
Yeah. I got an older sister, too.
Okay.
Yeah, she's 31. So I'm the middle child.
Okay.
She has a boyfriend. Actually, he's a mainlander. So she's from like pretty close to where your boyfriend's. Where's your Wolfville?
Wolfville.
So this guy's from Truro.
I thought it was Wolfsville, as in plural, and my boyfriend was just letting me say it.
Oh my God.
And yeah, so there's only one wolf.
Yeah.
And I was like, how long are you going to let me walk around? Like, I'm going to go visit in 3 weeks. And he was just going to let me walk around saying Wolfsville.
Oh my God.
We were just in PEI this summer, and he's like, they know.
PEI? I actually don't think I've ever been there.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm so well traveled.
It's PEI, Newfoundland.
Have you traveled though?
Oh yeah, but I've honestly, I never would have left Cape Breton if it wasn't for boxing.
That's crazy.
I would not have left.
What's the coolest place you've been?
I would say New York.
Yeah.
New York.
Yeah.
Yeah, New York City. I usually don't like cities, but New York had a pretty cool vibe to it.
It's gritty. It's still gritty and dirty.
Yeah.
How many broken bones do you think you've had in guesstimation?
My hands, like 20. My may have a broken arm right now.
I was going to say, how many broken bones do you have currently? You have a broken leg.
I have a broken leg. I honestly, I don't know. Like, so many.
All of them?
My face has been broke, like, many times. My jaw, my cheekbones, my skull here, everything in my face. Yeah.
So there's no injury, then, you say, that is, like, will deter you from becoming the best fighter?
No.
Okay.
No.
That is that like killer mentality. Because I think like professional wrestlers, they probably have a limit, but then they usually come back from it. Like it used to be a broken neck, mm-hmm. but then guys are rehabilitating their necks. They're coming back. They're having careers. Seizures was a big thing. There was a lot of like epilepsy, but again, people are healing themselves, but that's not the same for the boxing world, eh?
Well, I had one of those too.
Good for you. Seizure?
Yeah.
So you were a margarita maker, as they call
I
them.
Was. I was. I was dead. I was actually dead on the floor.
Yeah. What happened? Was it like directly related to a concussion?
Yeah. I had a really, really tough fight. It was 1 week before the seizure. I had an international title fight. I fought a guy who was like undefeated Olympian, and he beat me from pillar to post for 10 rounds. I ended up winning the fight.
Oh,
on,
really?
On the judges' scorecards, but he landed like probably over 500 power punches in the fight to my head. So my brain was swollen, and then I was like severely dehydrated, all that stuff. And then I was told to like basically stay in bed for like 3 weeks. Don't look at your phone. Don't open your eyes. Just lay there.
Like, so kill all sensory input. Yeah, yeah.
But after like 2 days, I'm like, nah, I'm fucked up. I'm good. And then I ended
my brain's not swollen.
No, my
what
brain
do you know?
Was fine. And then, I ended up like going fishing, hauling my boat and stuff. And then the Saturday after the fight, I just like woke up on the floor and going in an ambulance and stuff, and I'm like, what happened? And I ended up having like a seizure and all that.
No.
Yeah, they were gonna like they tried to tell me I couldn't box anymore, but then I'm like, yeah, that's not how it
doesn't
works.
Matter, right?
That's not how it works. Yeah.
Scary shit, man.
Yeah.
But you know your own body and you know what you're capable of, so.
Yeah, I just see the body as a tool. It's just like it carries the mind. That's all it's there for.
Mind over matter.
Yeah.
Like you can push your body as far as your mind will let you go. So. Except when you're a human margarita maker, then you don't.
Well, that's pretty well the end there.
Details.
Yeah. But if you survive it, you're good.
Yeah, that's true.
Walk it off. So 15, I get into boxing through court order. I was on like my third assault charge, I think. But this one was like a
normal,
pretty
serious. Totally normal. Just like
totally
casual
normal.
Three assault charges.
Yeah, so okay. Third one in a row. So the first two, I got what's that word? Let off the hook a little bit.
Okay, a little leeway,
because they weren't that bad. I just punched some guys in the face at school.
No bigs.
Broken nose, whatever. But the third one, that was when I started to become like a violent little bastard. So I was like, stomped some guys' teeth out in school, and I took a charge like a assault causing bodily harm or something.
Okay.
So I had two choices. It was either do probation with conditions and like a kind of like a part-time house arrest thing.
Oh, with an ankle monitor?
No ankle monitor. No,
it's that, not even that bad then.
It was like it was basically do that or go into like juvie for a couple months or something.
Okay.
So the judge wanted me to one of my conditions was to join some kind of sport to basically put all my aggressive energy into.
Did you have a couple options or was it just boxing?
No, I didn't even really care about boxing at the time. So I wanted to join hockey. Because
okay.
I had some buddies that played hockey, and I knew they fought on the rink.
You just would have gotten on the ice, cross-checked.
Yeah,
they haven't even
like,
blown the whistle yet.
Perfect. I can smash people and get away with
equipment,
it.
Equipment. It's fine.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, but then my dad was like, well, why don't you try boxing? And I'm like, boxing? And he's like, yeah. Because he knew a local boxing coach.
How old were you when you started actually boxing?
I think the first time I went to the gym was like 14.
Okay, so you were young.
I was young, yeah. And then, I didn't like start taking it really. I just went because I had to.
Okay.
But I didn't like, I used to get beat up all the time and like I hated the training. So I wasn't like that serious about it until around like 15 years old. That's when I started like getting obsessed. But that's when I found like Jack Dempsey. I saw a video of Jack Dempsey and I was like, I want to be just like this guy because he was such a violent fighter. And I was like, I don't know. I just saw myself the way that he fought and I fought.
Relatable.
Yeah, it was very similar. So that was when I kind of, you know, took it to the next level and started training every single day and studying fights, hitting the bag. But I was still like in and out of trouble with the law. Okay. Like I was in cuffs every weekend. Yeah. Like
really?
For like a long time, for like 2 years.
Was it related to like going out on the weekends or you were just finding fights at the farmer's market? Didn't matter.
No, I was like, it was like the crew I was hanging with. They were involved with like selling drugs and stuff. So they would always be like people owing them money or they owed somebody money or someone's coming for them. And then I was only young. I was only like 15 years old, but I always had these like freaking hands that could do damage. So
right.
I would get into fights and these guys, they knew that I was quick to react. So
sure.
They like and I liked it. I didn't mind. Like I knew that, you know, everybody around me is telling me these guys are using you, and I'm like, yeah, I know, but I'm also using them.
Right.
Because
you wanted to fight regardless.
I wanted to fight. I'm like, and I know these guys are gonna get me in fights. So you know that's how that went. So my amateur career was like really like it was dodgy. I was into boxing, but I was halfway in the door okay. on both sides. Yeah. So then I think it was 2015. I just something switched in my mind. I ended up getting in this like crazy fight, and this one would have put me in jail for like multiple years. That was when my turning point, when I'm like, okay, the only way out of this is boxing. That then I went obsessed. But I had like probably 18 amateur fights at that time. But then the Olympics were coming up, the Olympic trials. And then I ended up getting in a street fight. Not really a fight, I shouldn't call it that, but like an altercation, and my leg got broke. And this was...
That's a fight.
Yeah. 10 weeks before the Olympic trials.
Shit. Femur or tibia fibia?
Yeah, tibia fibia. Ooh. And I got a plate and stuff in it.
Oh, so you did real good.
Oh, I broke it bad. Yeah. And they were like, you're out. You can't. There's no way you can fight. And I'm like, okay. So I trained with, I just used to put my leg up on like a bench and I would hit the bag and I just kept training through. Wow. And then I cut it off and I went to the Olympic trials anyway.
You went anyway?
I went anyway, yeah. And
did,
I fought.
Did your leg atrophy? Did you have like one peg leg? Like, oh, yeah. It was like, I had a really tiny little
calf on this side. So I went and I fought he was like the Canadian champ, and I had to beat him to get to the into the next step or whatever, and I lost.
Okay.
So I ended up, my friend Brandon Brewer, he's actually from New Brunswick. He's another professional boxer. He had a pro fight card coming up, and he called me up and was like, do you want to turn pro on the undercard? He was the main event. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, yeah, fuck it, I'm doing it. I want to go with pro.
Crazy.
He's like, we'll pay you $500. I'm like, holy shit. Like that at that time, I'm like, that's money, a lot. Money. That's big money. I could get a beater with that, a beater car.
Yeah.
Just bomb around Sydney.
I could get the sickest beater car. $500.
Little Cavalier.
Is that what you got?
No.
I got a scooter. Fuck it.
Whoops. So, so I decided to turn pro. And it was hard to match me right from the get-go, because I was known for the punching power.
Okay.
So even if the guys were like a better fighter, they didn't want to get in the ring with me, because there's always that chance that I could just land a freaking bomb and knock them out.
Right.
So I ended up having to fight a guy who was like 264 in my pro debut.
And where do you fight at? What's your weight
usually? I was 195 pounds.
Okay, so that's huge discrepancy.
Yeah, huge, yeah. So I went into that fight and I ended up like knocking the guy out, and then the next one and the next one. But I had no promoter. I had no manager. My dad was actually like,
you had a dadager?
Yes, he'd get on the phone. He'd be drinking. He'd be calling matchmakers and promoters all around Canada.
Let me tell you something about my son.
That's it. Yeah, he's like, he'll knock out anybody. Just give him a shot. Put him on the card.
I love
it. And most promoters were like, fuck off. You know, who's this guy from Cape Breton calling me?
Drunkard.
Yeah, no, legit.
Someone's daddy.
But ended up like he did. He talked a couple guys into getting me on the card. And shout out Bobby.
Thanks, Dad.
Yeah. And every time I went and fought on someone's fight card, I won by knockout. But there was a guy that used to live in Cape Breton that had moved to Kingston. Mm-hmm. And he knew of this promoter. And he started talking about, he's like, there's this guy from Cape Breton, this kid who's like this brawler who's actually knocking everybody out. Like, and I was knocking out guys I was not supposed to knock out.
Really?
Like, I was going there as like an opponent for guys.
Okay.
He ended up talking to this promoter, and he's like, put this guy on your card. You won't regret it. You're going to be offering him a contract. Mike Power, so shout out. He told him, like, give this kid a shot. I'm telling you, he's from my hometown. But Three Lions and Dan, them, they weren't interested. They were like, our card's already full. He told him, listen, if the guy can pay his way, mm-hmm. we'll put him on the card. But we just don't have the raw ready budgeted out for the fight. Mm-hmm. So my dad, being a musician in Cape Breton, he ended up like going around bars singing. And at the end of every night, he would say, my son's is trying to get on a fight card. We need to help raise money. So he started raising money, and he ended up raising like $3,500.
That's so cute.
Yeah, we ended up buying a spot on this fight card, and I went and I fought a guy from Hungary, and I knocked him out in the first round. And then Dan, the Three Lions Promotions, they offered me a contract.
Crazy. And they didn't even want you on the card.
No. And so at this time, my record's like 7-0 with 7 knockouts. Mm-hmm. And we basically had a conversation. It was like, what are you looking to get out of boxing? And I was like, damn, I'd really like to fight for a Canadian title one day. You know, and I didn't even think I was going to get this far.
Right, of course.
So my first fight with Three Lions Promotions, they're like, we're going to make it happen. So they gave me a Canadian title shot. And I went against the champion, who was 8-0.
Okay.
He was undefeated, and he was like next big thing to come out of Ontario, and I was this like unknown kid from this island nobody ever heard of. This guy talked a lot of trash. Like, he was running his mouth.
It's like a pro wrestler.
Yeah.
Cut a promo on
him. Oh, he was good. He was really good. And he got in my head too a little
bit. Did he? I was going to say, yeah. Does that work?
It did. Like, I was actually like a little bit nervous going into the fight.
You have feelings.
A little bit at this time.
Again, we found a feeling.
I was a little nervous. So, okay. But I go in and I knocked him out in the first round, like, and pretty much ended his career. So I became the Canadian champion. And then
was that 8 fights in now?
8 fights in.
Wow.
And I, like I said, I'd never even thought in a million years I was going to fight for it, let alone win it. So I won it, and then that kind of like built my confidence. And then right after that, we went right into an international title fight. So usually in the pros, you got to be like a real established amateur, have an Olympic pedigree to really make it in the pros.
Okay.
Usually the guys that like have a bad amateur career end up becoming, we call them like journeymen in the pros.
We've got those.
You have those. I know, I'm learning about this.
Yeah.
You have journeymen, you have like tomato cans in boxing. Yep. Like, they're just there to basically make you
elevate the talent that they want to push.
Exactly.
Yeah. Same.
So we have those too. And,
cool.
And that was supposed to be my story. That was what I should have been.
Okay.
But I just kept winning. And like, and then I ended up getting like a really big fight early. It was a world title fight. So I was 13 fights in, 13 knockouts.
Is that abnormal? Like having
it's never happened.
Okay.
It's what I did never happened before.
Toot your own horn.
So I ended up, this was during COVID. So what happened was Oscar Rivas, he's known as, they called him the Colombian Mike Tyson. This guy was a monster.
Did he have a face tattoo?
No. Okay. But he had big tattoo companies.
Okay, fine.
He's a tank. He's about 250 pounds. Like, just, he's a heavyweight. He was a top 10 heavyweight. This guy was avoided by Tyson Fury, by Deontay Wilder. Okay. These guys wanted nothing to do with him. He was a real monster.
Okay.
So the WBC had just made a new weight division called Bridgerweight. It was 200 pounds to 225.
Okay, so it was kind of in between then?
Yeah, in between cruiser and heavy.
Okay.
To basically bridge the weight gap. So they called it Bridgerweight. So this was the world title fight, and Rivas was set to fight Bryant Jennings from the States for the championship of the world. Both of these guys are established pros. They're at the highest level.
Okay.
You know, and I was like a fan, like, oh my God, this is going to be an awesome fight coming
can't
up.
Can't wait to meet these guys.
I was like, I had my pay-per-view was ordered and everything. Oh, it was on Fight TV, and okay. I couldn't wait because I knew Rivas because he trained in Montreal.
Okay.
So I was like a big fan of Oscar Rivas. And anyways, Bryant Jennings wouldn't get his COVID shots or something, so he ended up not being able to fight. So this is 2 weeks out from the world title fight.
Oh, crazy.
And I remember the boxing world was just like, oh my God, who's going to replace Jennings to fight? They were throwing all kinds of names out there and stuff.
Sure.
Meanwhile, my promoter didn't even tell me. He took my name and he threw it in the mix. He called the promoter in Montreal and was like, Ryan will take the fight.
And you had no idea.
No.
Mentally, you were like, I am not invested. No. This is not going to happen. You were fanboying this
fight. Yes, I was like, and my daughter was being born.
Oh, boy.
Yes.
So all the things.
Yes. So I'm in the hospital. My daughter's like about to be born. And Dan, my promoter, calls me up. And he's like, Ryan, he's like, are you sitting down? And I'm like, no, actually. I'm like.
The most ants in your pants you've probably ever had in your life.
I was like, I'm waiting for my daughter to pop out, actually. So. Yeah. He's like, well, he's like, I got some big news. And I'm like, what's that? Basically, you're the one that they're giving the shot to.
Crazy.
The world title shot.
Yep.
And I'm like, okay, number one, I'm not a heavyweight.
Yeah.
Like, I was, at the time, I weighed about 190 pounds.
Okay, so you're well under heavyweight.
I was way under. I was even small for cruiserweight.
Oh, crazy.
Cruiserweight's 200.
Oh,
so this fight was 200 to 225. And then Oscar Rivas walks around like 240 something.
Wow. Okay.
So like, he was cutting down to 225 to make the limit. I had to come up to get to 200.
Wow. That's not why good for your cardio.
No, like, that's why they picked me, because they're like, because it was Rivas' show. It was his promoter was putting the belt on.
Okay.
He was the guy fighting for this belt. Like, it was him. You know, he was the A side, we call it.
Okay.
So they brought me in as a quick substitute, basically the easiest win they could get to get him the world title so he could go on to make millions. He could go on to be the pay-per-view star.
Okay.
That's the dirty side of boxing.
Okay.
So I was there.
It's a business.
Yeah, it's a business.
It's a business.
And I was the sacrificial lamb to get him.
Love
you know.
It.
And at the time, I'm like, my daughter's about to be born. I got no money. So I but I accept the fight. because I'm like,
what are you gonna do?
I'm not gonna say no. You don't say no. You don't. One code, like personally for me, it's like you don't turn down a fight. You just don't turn down a fight. Once you do that, you're as good as dead. It's the same as quitting. So I said yes to the fight, hung up the phone. Daughter was born, and then, you know, started basically telling people, I just took this fight, and everybody's like, Ryan, what?
How?
Yeah. 20.
Okay.
19-1 with 18 knockouts. Good for you. My last fight was I knocked out a top 15 in the world.
Okay.
So my next fight now coming up is against a guy who's basically on the same trajectory as me.
Okay.
Except he's like been around a long time. He's already been at the world stage for the last 10 years. He's fought for the world title a few times. He's always in the mix with the top guys, whereas I'm the new guy coming into the top. So I got to beat the old gatekeeper.
So where's the fight? When's the fight? Where can people watch it?
So this one's in Cape Breton. It's already sold out, so there's no tickets available, but it'll be on Fight TV.
Cool.
Yeah, pay-per-view there.
How are you feeling about it?
The guy I'm fighting from Nigeria, Duradol, like I've seen him for years. He's like, he's a monster of a puncher. Yep. Heavy, heavy hitter. He's got 40 knockouts and 43 wins.
Shit. So he's got double the fight history.
He has double, just his knockouts alone, he has two times the amount of knockouts I have even fights.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
So he's a big name to get through. But if I win, then it's going to put me mandatory for the world title at cruiserweight, the weight division I belong in.
Okay.
Yeah.
So no pressure.
Yeah.
Feeling good. No pressure.
No, well, there's more pressure. I feel the pressure of everyone around me because my team is so invested. They've done so much to get me to this point. My promoters, my coach, everybody sacrificed around me to help get me here.
But they believe in you.
They believe in me.
They do it because they want to do it.
Yeah, so I feel their pressure. Okay. But me personally, it's a fight. I don't give a fuck. I'll go in and get knocked out or knock him out.
But that's why you are who you are. That's, you know.
Yeah.
Where is your dadager now? Is he still your biggest fan?
Yeah, he's not in, but he basically, once I got a promoter and I started, like, you know, getting up there a little bit, he stepped back and was like, hey, this is out of my...
We're now out of, okay.
And he was never like, you know, I want to be involved in the business part of it because he knew it was over his head.
Okay.
But he always stayed in my corner. Like, he always walks out with me, holds the Cape Breton flag.
Oh, your dad walks out with you?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Cool. So that's kind of you giving him back.
Yeah.
Okay. Is he still singing in bars?
Yeah.
Okay.
Of course he is. Still fighting in bars, too. Guy's still fighting out there.
He's consistent.
Like, no, yeah, nothing will ever change back in Cape Breton.
That's good, though. Yeah. You like that.
I do.
Even Steven.
But I can't go back for more than 2 weeks, and I'm coming back to camp with broken bones and stitches.
So everything is status quo at home. Like, you come home, you're still fighting.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you need to move.
Yeah. But I just go home for a week and see everybody and get out of there.
So most people would go home, relax, decompress, see their family.
No, we're going to do 25 shots of Burt Reynolds and see how many people I can knock out at the bar.
Okay, let's do my top 10 tailor-made questions. It's a speed round, but don't feel rushed in your answers. Ready? Okay. True or false? The Rock. You know The Rock. Okay. Was his dad born in Nova Scotia?
False.
It's fucking true.
What?
I know!
No.
It's true. Favorite band or artist?
My dad.
Oh, what's your dad's name? So
Bobby Curry.
Does he have any music on Spotify?
You know what? He probably does.
Does he really? He
probably does.
Oh my god. Okay. Shout out to the dadager. Okay, a beauty product you cannot live without.
Nivea moisturizer.
I'm impressed that you had one. I am so impressed. Okay. Favorite food?
Deer meat.
Deer meat?
Yeah.
Prepared how?
Slow cooker.
Okay, so just like, I've only had like venison and a shepherd's pie. I'm like a little bit afraid.
Really?
Yeah.
Or heart, deer heart, frog.
Deer heart. It's yeah. Like very like animalistic of you. I love just every... raw like.
No. I cook it.
Okay, fine. Yeah. Do you like Polish food?
Yeah.
Pierogies.
Yeah.
Meat sticks. Yeah.
Sausages.
Keeps the weight on though.
It does.
Yeah.
Salty.
Salty. Oh, I do love it.
Water weight.
Okay. What is a really good fight movie? Like a movie that really depicts boxing or any fight world well? Because like for us, The Wrestler, the movie with Mickey Rourke, perfect depiction. Like it is sad and dark and yeah. Any fight movie got it right.
That you Southpaw.
Southpaw.
Yeah. Okay. With Jake. I can't know his
name. Jake Gyllenhaal is
yeah,
it?
Yeah.
Yeah. I knew an actor. Is there a weird food from Cape Breton that you love that people don't know about?
What's it called?
It's your food.
Yes. My grandfather makes it. So, you know, like rhubarbs?
Yeah.
Like a rhubarb?
Yeah.
Like, he boils it down and makes like juice out of it.
Rhubarb juice.
Yeah.
Interesting. Is it just sour? Because I love
it. So sour.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Is it like would you drink like a big glass of it or is it like
a shot?
Yeah,
he puts it in like a jar that he reused for the last 50 years.
So it's like a seasoning spoon, one that never gets washed. Yeah. You do it in the rhubarb cup.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's it.
It's not small town, white trash shit. I've ever heard it.
So weird now that I think about it. Fucking place is weird.
Okay, we talked about your favorite place. What is your favorite clothing apparel? Or favorite brand?
Honestly, I like going to like Value Village, getting like used like...
Really?
Like I get that. I find like old band shirts and stuff at Value Village. Like that's my favorite.
I love that.
Vintage stuff.
Okay, cool. So you're a bit of fashion. Yeah, a little bit of a fashionista.
A little bit, yeah. Like okay. Old stuff, yeah.
Cool, I appreciate that. I respect that. How many tattoos do you have, ish?
One now. One. I was like one tattoo. Like, I don't know, because I have so many cover-ups. Every tattoo has been, like, covered up, like, or blasted over. Like, there's just so many.
What is your worst tattoo?
My worst tattoo is gone. It's covered. But I'm going to say what it used to be.
Okay.
I used to have this skull. I got this skull when I was, like, 14, 13 or 14.
Okay.
By the way, I had my first tattoo when I was 11. That's when I started getting tattoos.
What was your... Okay, so continue. I need to know what your first tattoo was, but also, let's hear...
So the skull with crossbones and a crown says win some, lose some.
Yep.
That was like one of my first tattoos.
Okay.
And the crown, now it just looks like a crown.
Yeah.
But when I was like 14, the guy that did it looked like three fucking dildos. And I used to have to sit there and like always have my hand over my arm like that.
The crown of ding dongs.
Yes.
We love a crown of ding dongs.
I got it fixed later. Thanks, Jeff Ramsey, for fixing it. But.
Also hate you. Yeah. I feel like that would be a really good thing.
That tattoo got me in a lot of fights. People like, hey, that looks like three. I'd be like, you motherfucker.
I'll show you. You're right, but I'll show you. Yeah. Okay, so who tattooed you at 11? You don't have to say, like...
My uncle. My uncle Shane.
You sold that out fast.
Yeah.
Like an Uncle Shane.
Uncle Shane.
What did he tattoo on you?
I had an R right here. It's gone now. It's covered up. It's underneath
just the foot of that reaper. Just in case you forgot the first letter of your name.
Yes.
Okay, just...
And my mom drew it on, like, you know, you do a stencil. Aww. Before. My mom drew it on with pen. It was like, he can only get one letter.
There's so many things wrong with this.
Really?
Your mom drew on the stencil.
Yeah. Yeah.
Your uncle tattooed you at 11.
Yeah.
And it was an R.
It was an R for Ryan. No joke. Over my daughter's life.
What's over the R now?
It's a Reaper. Okay. I have a bunch of Grim Reapers.
R for Reaper.
Sure.
Not for Ryan anyway.
Yeah, it's Reaper now.
At least it was a good transition. So you're such up. A good
Holy
sport about
fuck, it. What
11 is crazy.
Now that I think about it, I never really thought about that.
Let's unpack that.
I used to go to elementary school.
Let's talk about your childhood trauma.
The teachers would be like, he draws it on with pen every day. And it's like, no, it's real. Yeah.
Yeah, your teachers, if they knew it was real, they'd probably like, we have to make some phone calls. Like,
children's aid, come take this guy.
But I love that you got away with it because they just assumed you drew it on every day.
Yeah. But then grade 7, when I had like 4 like tattoos, like big ones, they were
grade
like, okay.
Grade 7, so how old? 13?
13. At 13, I had like, by the, like the end of like grade 7, I had probably like 8 or 10 tattoos. Like big ones, like I was covered.
Did your uncle do all of those?
I was getting them done everywhere. I was going into people's basements, getting them, whoever would tattoo me.
How many times have you had staph infections?
Oh, we're not gonna talk about that.
Okay. So usually I wrap this up with finish this lyric and I sing something and then you embarrassingly sing it back. But I want to know if you know this song and if so.
1778. I wasn't sure, but now.
Fuck yeah.
Shout out Stan Rogers.
Yeah, I actually listen to it now when I work out.
It's awesome, isn't it? Doesn't it hype you up?
It does hype you up.
I'm going to fight someone right now. I just heard that.
Fight!
Feel the winter cold against my skin.